March 8, 2022, it's the Watt for Pedro show.
Well, I'd go by his house, you know, to by his apartment. And get him out of bed, maybe, or something. And he'd wake up and roll the piano and start playing, you know. He'd play anything, might be just one of his tunes, you know. He started playing it, and he'd look at me, I guess, and so when he'd look at me, I'd get my arm, you know, and start trying to find what he was playing, and continue to play over and over and over and over, and I'd get this part, and then next time we'd go over it, I'd get another part, and he would stop showing me some parts that were pretty difficult. And if I had a lot of trouble, well, he'd get his portfolio out, you know, and I'd show him the music. He's got music. He's got all of them written. Mm-hmm. And I'd read it and learn it. He would rather a guy learn without reading, you know, because that way you feel it better. You feel it quicker when you memorize it, when you learn it by heart, by ear, you know. And so when I almost had the tune down, then he would leave me with it. You know, he'd leave me to practice it alone. And he'd go out somewhere, maybe go to the store, go back to bed or something. Mm-hmm. And I'd just sit there and run over it, so I had it pretty well. And then I'd call him and we'd play it down together. And sometimes we'd just get one tune a day. Yeah.
Strikes you out, what? It's days
that's
all over
unlucky,
again.
Yeah, right, right.
Look, we start off. I was blasting, Coltrane about playing with Thelonious Monk in 1958. And then melt yourself down with It Is What It Is. And because of those Estonian software engineers with this cabin bench, I got with me all the way from London, England, Ruth Kohler. Welcome aboard, Ruth!
Hi, Mike. So nice to meet you.
We're underway, people. 20 years and 8 months of doing the show, and I'm still fucking blowing clams. We got to give big credit to Ste Pelea for the connect. Grazie.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm really interested. I mean, you work in the bass the way you do and all that. Your journey through music. So please bring your earliest musical recollection, if you can, Ruth.
Yes, so I grew up in a tiny little place in northern Italy in the Alps, so like Heidi, basically. And as you can imagine, there was only sheep and cows and not much else around.
That's funny, because when we tour in Switzerland and we're on them little roads, we call them Heidi roads.
Really? Well, exactly. You must have seen me, baby.
Yeah, in the old days of when they first were coming out with those Navigator GPS, they would fuck TomTom, and they fuck up, especially with the tunnels all up there. And so you get lost on a Heidi road, right?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's a good place to get lost in.
Isn't it? Very beautiful.
Yeah, so, yeah, I basically started, my parents were very supportive.
Oh, you say Northern Italy, because my mama's people were from the Dolomiti.
Yeah, that's where I'm from, the Dolomites.
Okay, man, we might be related.
Right, that's where your mom's from, no way.
Yeah, well, her ma, because her daddy was, his people were from Sicily, both ends, you know.
Oh, right, okay.
It's the way they do it in the U.S.
So you're very, very, you're probably more Italian than I am then.
Who knows? It doesn't matter. As Sly Stone said, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at.
Oh, man.
So your earliest recollection.
So I'm up in the fields, but my parents are very supportive. They always pushed me to play music and, you know, they wanted me to play an instrument. So I started off on the violin, but you know, sort of like music school kind of vibe, you know, like half an hour a week and just reading some stuff. And
so you're saying your earliest memory?
Started hating it.
You mean you're saying your earliest memory is your parents asking you to play violin?
Yeah, well, they asked me to choose an instrument, and I remember seeing this prodigy, this Chinese prodigy child on TV playing the violin, and I was like, that's what I want to do. I can do that. Obviously, I couldn't. I was really, really rubbish at it.
But was there music in the pad? Before that, were you listening to music? Did either your parents play? Were there any musical instruments?
Yeah. So my dad was a singer. He sang in a lot of church choirs. He sang the bass in church choirs.
Okay.
So he was very musical, and he came from a very musical family. Like, they always sing at home and sing sort of traditional Alpine tunes. I've got lots of memories of my grandma singing all these tunes, like quite sad funeral songs, but really beautiful, you know, really beautiful songs. So I've always got that. I think that's sort of my first musical memory, really getting into music and being amazed by all that.
You're talking dirges.
Huh?
Dirge?
What's that?
I think Chopin wrote the famous one, right? Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun. A little bit, yeah.
Really? I think they first played it at his. But anyway, they have you. Now, this is outside of school. This is like a private teacher learning you violin?
Yeah, we didn't really have music at school at the time. It was sort of something you had to do outside of school. So you had to, like, inscribe in a local music school, and then you got a teacher for like half an hour a week, and you basically went there. And she was pretty cruel, actually. She used to slap me with the bow of my fingers because I couldn't tune very well. Yeah, she was quite angry.
But it didn't dissuade you. It didn't dissuade you from music, but did it dissuade you from violin?
From violin, definitely, yeah, but not from music. I mean, I sort of stuck with it for quite a while because, you know, at that age, I sort of felt guilty about stopping something, and my parents were like, you started now. We bought this violin, rah, 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 so.
You made the commitment to stay with it.
Yeah, so I felt like a little bit, you know, they sort of guilt tripped me into it a little bit, and I stayed with it for 7 years, but it, very reluctantly. And then I just started hating it more and more, and we had a piano at home. My dad bought a piano, and I just really enjoyed playing the piano, and I started writing stuff on the piano as well, outside.
Are you self-taught on the piano?
Well, yeah, at the beginning I was sort of composing little tunes, and I've still got those little tunes that, you know, I didn't know anything about harmony or anything, and just sort of wrote these little pieces, and actually, you know, looking back at it is quite cute, looking at those things and just looking at yourself in a different way when you thought about music in a different way, when you had no knowledge about anything and just sort of went with what your ears.
It's tripping how all the paths you take lead to today. And so I think it doesn't look back like. What, can I ask you the first record you bought with your own money?
The first record was Michael Jackson, I think.
Which one?
Yeah. I was about.
Thriller?
No, it was Bad.
Off the Wall? Oh, it's Unbad. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bad, yeah. That was sort of my age. I think I was like 8 or 9 at the time.
And what was the first gig you saw?
Oh my gosh, the first gig was. I was probably a teenager when I got into playing music and I started going to gigs, you know, and we started doing gigs as well locally. So I think it was just some local rock and local punk bands that.
Oh, okay.
That I saw.
That's okay. You can't remember the name of the band though.
No, I was probably playing at the first gig that I ever saw.
Wow, that's bitching. First gig I saw was T-Rex. I definitely was not playing. Me and B-Boo went and, but they were so tiny, right? Arena rock is bullshit. Wasn't club. So, okay. So you're doing this music by yourself, you know, with teachers and stuff. And when do you start playing with other people? Like after school in the afternoon, right?
Yeah, basement that's
band,
right.
Bedroom band, garage band.
Yeah, that's it. When I was a teenager, I formed my own band because I sort of had this group of people. They had a little rehearsal studio that was kind of funded by the local youth center and things like this, you know, and I just sort of hung out with them. And then I was like, right, I'm going to form my own band. And I got into punk music and just sort of started writing music. And again, I didn't know anything about music and started playing guitar, you know.
So this band that you formed, do they have a name?
Yeah, we were called Stuff and Nonsense.
Okay, Stuff and Nonsense. You were the guitar player and the composer?
Yeah, so I was sort of the main person. I think I was the sort of motor and that's what kind of the engine.
But you weren't doing violin, you weren't doing piano, you were doing guitar. And you self-taught yourself?
Self-taught on guitar, yeah. I didn't know anything about anything. So we had two guitars, bass and drums, and I was sort of shouting as well. I was kind of, the fronting it as well. It was great fun, you know, at the time. It was just amazing. We did, like, local gigs around the area and...
Did you relate piano and violin to the guitar, or was it a whole nother thing?
Not at all. It just felt like a completely different art form to me, because what I'd learned before was like reading sort of simple pieces of Mozart, and, you know, it was a completely different attitude, and also just getting into like rock and punk rock and stuff. So
and rhythm with the drummer, right?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't really know like how instruments were supposed to work together, you know. I didn't know the roles of a bass, so I didn't know the sort of standard things of that. And so at some point then later on in that period, I started playing bass as well, and we had two basses because I just really loved playing the bass for some reason. I let go of the guitar.
And this band had ended up having two basses. All right.
Yeah, we had two basses, and I started playing like kind of. It had sort of two bass lines, and one was sort of more melodic, and the other one was maybe more like traditional, sort of lower down, you know, bass line.
Were you aware of Delta 5?
Aware of what?
There was a Leeds band called Delta 5 with all ladies, and they had two bass
lines. Oh, right. No, I don't know them.
It was the old days of like Nikons, like late 70s.
Oh, right. Okay. I've got to check it out.
Yeah. I even was in a two bass band, but that's all. It was just two basses. It was called Dose. 35 years.
Oh, really?
The lady from Black Flag. Yeah, you can.
You like it? Yeah.
Well, you know, music is music. See, maybe you are free in a little bit because learning what the roles are supposed to be, you end up in like kind of constricted situations. Sometimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so true. You know, and now I know that because now I've sort of come out on the other end again. I'm sort of trying to get back to what I had then. You know, sort of trying to find all ways around it, not to do stuff that I know or not to do stuff that my ears know really well. And, you know, I'm sort of trying to get out of that and work with different things to try and get to that place again to write music. Because listening back to that kind of stuff is really interesting, you know. It's like I would never be able to write something like that now because...
You're a different person.
Yeah, and you just know too much about it, and you like just.
All right, you think like you say, like they say in the courtroom, you can't unring the bell.
Yeah.
Look, you gave me this music from Acoustic Ladyland called Not So. Let's play it.
Okay, cool.
Time and a place, a taste of the wind that's hitting your face. You feel all the vibrations of all the earthquakes as the ticker starts whispering, cut to the chase, cut to the chase, cut to the chase.
Thank you. Let that live. Let now.
Rock for Pedro show. Start off that chunk of music with Not So from Acoustic Ladyland. Then we have brand new from Mini Beast. This is Peter from Mission of Burma, his new band, where he left drums to play guitar. Stimulants. And then Elena Cella after that, brand new. It's probably Cella, huh?
Yeah.
Clog. And then Bad Friends from Sam Locke, featuring Ed Gray. Atmosphere, brand new. 0229P, that's the title. Bombas Brendan, Inside the Envelope. Noisuka, brand new. Corners. A couple things from Canada. Karam with Another Theory. Shot. Oh, that's a fire hose. And I got that music for that tune from a Doe song. So the two bass thing comes in. Schooner, after that, live. The Original Serpent, and brand new from Cremation Lily. Dreams Drenched, Static. And finally, part two of Ruth Kohler's Skilla. Did I pronounce that right?
Skilla.
Skilla. Okay. See.
Yeah.
Okay. What's really important, she wanted to know. Okay. Back to your story, your music journey. So you got this band. Now you're off guitar. Now it's a two bass band. You're still in school at this time?
Yeah. We're still at school. Yeah.
So what happens when you leave school? Do you go to higher education for your musical thing?
Yeah. Well, at that point, I knew I wanted to be a performer, you know. I was like, right, that's what I'll do. Because, you know, everyone at that point, so when you're 18, 19, finishing school, you have to choose what you're going to study. Lots of people went to uni and studied stuff, and I was like, I want to be a performing musician, you know, that's what I really enjoyed. And my parents were super supportive, and they were just like letting me do whatever, so I really have to thank to them a lot, you know.
Yeah, much respect.
Just letting me do whatever, because a lot of people, they weren't so lucky, and their parents were like, maybe you should not become a...
Well, my pop, you know, how long are you going to be pissing in the wind, boy?
Exactly. And they were like, yeah, great, go for it, you know. So it kind of, obviously I was stuck in this tiny little place in the middle of the Alps. So I wanted to know about harmony and I wanted to know more about music. I really had that desire. So I just, I was like, right, I'm going to have to go to a bigger city to learn about this stuff, you know, and find a school. And I sort of knew a friend of a friend who was in, I was obviously didn't have internet or anything like that, but I knew this person who was in London and studied music there at this specific music school. And I just rang them up and said, you know, what do I have to do to get into this school? And they just said, well, there is a, you know, you have to send something in that where you can, something that you've written or something that they can hear you play, and then they can admit you or they want
something
to
evaluate.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, oh shit, because I didn't know anything, you know, I literally didn't know anything about music. And I just sent those tunes that I'd written with my band and a little bit of playing, and I just sent this tape over to them, and they were like, yeah, come, you're admitted. And I just put all of my stuff in my car and I just drove over to the UK. Slept in a car for a few weeks until I found a place somewhere, and then I started this school, and it was like a sort of introduction course. You know, it was really good for me because I was a real beginner, like I didn't know anything, and I just started getting into the schools like from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. I had an amazing bass teacher, this guy called Nico Gomez. He's like a sort of jazz, he was really into jazz and Latin, and like super inspiring, you know, and he just totally like...
So not just a performer, you decided you wanted to be a bass player.
I wanted to be a bass player, yeah. It was really clear, like immediate. Once I started playing bass in that punk band that I had, I was like, right, that's the instrument I want to play. There was no question. I always liked the lower frequency. I always hated that. I think it's the violin actually that really put me off. Like anything high, you know, it doesn't really go with my ears. It doesn't. A lot of sort of higher instruments, I find it
difficult. So cymbals must drive you crazy. D-Boo's guitar tone. Oh man, that would have done a number. He loved trouble. But
like high clarinet or something, you know.
Yeah,
something.
Sure, sure.
The high clarinet. The
or fife.
High
volume.
Oh my
How about
goodness.
Fife?
No.
You know, there's a town in Washington State called Fife, and I always think of that instrument, like pentatonic.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So this teacher was very supportive and very, instrumental in your instrument.
Yeah. And I was like a sponge, you know. I just wanted to learn.
I was going to say that about school, because some people say it's a bummer, but you get into it what you put, you get out of it what you put into it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, you know, I was like this kid from, I didn't know anything, and I just moved to this massive city and slept in my van, and, you know, just like, what is this? Amazing.
What about on the side? Did you get into any bands on the side?
Well, at school?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was lots of bands that we
had to play. Outside of school, you know? And probably you were spending so much time at school, it was your whole life.
Outside was kind of difficult at that point, exactly, because you said, you know, I was just there, like, from 9 in the morning to 7 in the evening, just playing with those people. And also, my playing wasn't really good enough to do anything at that point. You know, thinking back at it now, I was really like learning how to read and learning about harmony and learning how to, you know, even just to play simple things and feeling things in 4/4. You know, I was really,
you know, I'm interested in that in a way, because it seems like they bring the bass guitar, or the bass, let's say, into this world of harmony and chords,
mm-hmm.
and they never don't really ask that of drummers.
Yeah,
because the notes last so I'm thinking, because where my journey's taken me, is it really a 4-string guitar or is it a 4-string drum set?
Yeah.
And I wonder if that harmony, because I listen to your music, it seems you really get in the drum side of playing bass. It's not like pretending it's a piano.
Yeah. What do you mean exactly by that?
All this attention to the chords and the harmonies, a lot of that stuff gets lost in the lower frequencies.
Yeah.
You know, if you're down there wrestling with the kick, you're like a kick drum. And so, let's say you have 20 kick drums, and, you know, 20 timpanis. I mean, what kind of harmonies are you going to? I think the way you rhythmically, anyway, it's part of my evolution and stuff, but any kind of knowledge musically to me is valuable. None of it's wasted. It's invested in the next time you play, every time you play. Yeah. So,
absolutely.
But I wonder if so much attention to harmony with bass instruments, because we're so much like drummers in certain ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we really have to have both in it. Like, it's a real sort of...
Well, I noticed you don't go to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 12 string. You stay with the 4.
Yeah, I tried to have a 5-string. At some point, I thought that's what I was, you know, like, learning everyone had a 5-string bass. I was like, fuck, maybe that's, I have to do that. And I felt like I had to do it. But I just didn't like it at all. It just didn't suit me. I never used it, and I just got really confused. I'm sort of quite simple in that way, you know. I like simple setups of knob, volume, and tone.
Besides your teacher being a big influence, was there other bass players?
Yeah, there was other bass players as well, and they're all great. We all shared lots of experiences, and they were all a lot better.
Can you name some for me? I'm just curious.
You know, I can't even remember. I don't think most of them can be played anymore.
Can I bring up one that I like?
Yeah.
A big influence on me, and maybe with James Jamerson.
Oh, my God, yeah. I totally got into James Jamerson at that school. In fact, my teacher, he got me to buy the James Jamerson book. And
you mean the one for Dr. Licks?
Just the one with the whole bass lines, you know.
That was not his real name. I think his name was Lubinsky or something like this. But he made this book. It was kind of a dedication to him.
I
think all of us on electric bass owe that man everything.
Absolutely. I learned so much from listening to him and you know, read. That's how I learned how to read as well, with that book, in fact. Because
wow.
I was so into the music, so it was kind of easy for me to, because I knew the music, so.
Motown, right? He's on 200 top 10 hits. He's one of the most, but his name's only on one record cover. But he's
that's
on all
madness.
Kinds of records. Yeah, it's crazy.
That's madness, isn't it?
Yeah. Justice, right? Mm. Just Us. Not the right guy or the right girl.
Did you check that book out as well?
Oh, absolutely. I got it. We're at the end of the... I got to stop us here, because we're at the end of the first hour, March 8th, 2022. Lock Peter, so special guest Ruth Goller. Hold tight for hour two. March 8th, 2022. It's the second hour of Lock Peter Show.
My hand in it, could I become electric? Cities. killer spirals we both draw.
Thank you.
Art for Pedro show. Start the second hour. Bud Prentice with Angular Spirals. Then Ben Salter from Tasmania, Fancy. Lisa Cameron, Damon Smith, Alex Cunningham with The Endless Instant from Poland. Artie Cooley, Rona. Probably destroyed that. Sorry, my apologies. Dobry Brozo. I know Dobro's good in Slav, you know, Croatian people here. Reynolds out of Montreal. Akutan Sljajo Fole. Sorry, terrible French. And I need to destroy that language. And then Vula Veal. Interesting band name. With Fire. And so how long are you at that school?
That was just a year. It was sort of a one-year introduction course.
And then what did you do after that?
After that, I was a bit lost, and I sort of didn't know really what to do. I had no money, so I moved back to Italy for a year, and I just worked. I just practiced for a year and worked in a bar and just saved lots of money, because I knew then I wanted to go, because I got into jazz and improvised music during that time at that school as well, so I wanted to go back and study jazz. So I applied to go to Middlesex University. And again, I sort of sent a tape, and I was, you know, nowhere near good enough to be at that course, but somehow they took me, and I moved back to London then after that year. And then I was for 3 years at that university studying jazz.
Okay. And did you have a professor like the other one, or a community?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was great because, again, you know, I didn't really, that first year when I was here, I didn't sort of branch out a lot and didn't sort of check out the London scene. I didn't really have those kind of connections at the time. But then once I was at uni, I started playing gigs like immediately, and we just had loads of little jazz gigs around, just playing almost every night and formed loads of different bands. And then I was kind of working, you know, I was like, doing a lot of learning, a lot of practicing over those 3 years. And I had to catch up a lot as well, because I didn't really, you know, I didn't know about jazz until I moved to London. So a lot of the people that were there, they sort of grew up coming from like a specialist music school and being trained, like, you know, in harmony and theory and everything. And I didn't really have that at all. So I only discovered like Coltrane like when I was 20, you know. And so
okay,
for me,
speaking of that, you know, his favorite bass players, right, from Philadelphia, Paul Chambers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
Jimmy Garrison.
Definitely, you know, all that stuff. So it was really mind-blowing.
What I'm wondering is, because I've seen the pictures, you're playing sang and stuff, but did you have a stand-up?
No, I was always more of an electric player. I mean, during that time, I sort of started playing double bass as well, but I never really saw myself as a double bass player, you know. It was always a bit of a battle for me because I was practicing a lot on electric, and a lot of the music I was into was on electric as well, because I got really into Brazilian music then at the time.
Baixo. They call the bass player Baixo, right?
Yeah.
Man, exactly. And what a voice they give to it. It's so all that Latin stuff, they really get the bass getting melodic. There I could see the harmony kind of thing, really big time. Yeah,
definitely.
It's still like a drum. It's still like a drum, but it's a singing drum.
Yeah,
it's really interesting.
Definitely.
Those guys, especially
into, like,
north, the north of Brazil,
and all that kind of music. You know, like Iti Beretswar. You know that his bass player.
Absolutely.
I fucking love his playing. So great. So yeah, for me it was really the electric bass. Although yeah, I did practice double bass, and I played some jazz and double bass, but I don't think I was very good at it, you know, ever. So I kind of, that was again another thing I sort of felt like I had to do, because I was at a jazz course and I should be playing upright. It's much later I sort of realized, maybe that's not my voice, you know, maybe I don't have to do that, and I can actually allow my own stuff to come into this kind of music and mix it up with what I need.
I don't know what you call it, paradox of jazz. Thelonious Monk would have never won the Thelonious Monk contest. Because they want innovation, but not really.
Yeah.
It's like in the old punk scene, they're yelling anarchy, but not really. You know, we don't really mean it. You know, it's just look, you gave me this grande gusto, and SoCal, living here in the harbor of Los Angeles, big dog in LA. Let's listen.
Don't wanna know what it's like in LA. We got send us a postcard of your flat out fun. I'll take your word for it, could be the place for it. Some say the world of it, can't say I'm done with it. Trials, wearing insights into this guy in the past.
Dr. Pedro Show, that chunk of music start off with Grande Gufo. Big dog in LA. Big dog. When you used to call somebody a big dog here, it's a nice thing. They call each other dogs sometimes. I don't know why. Okay, hey, dog. You know, it's like, okay, Emily Robb after that with How to Moonwalk. This is brand new. A Live at Friendship Speedwell. I think Bill Nace produced it. Al Margolis with Viv Cornenham. Skyline Sunset number 4. Fire Tools with Decrepit F. Phoenix. Ray Shin with Gift Horse. And then finally, Ruth Goller's Skilja again. Often they came to visit, even just to see how she was. Well, that's a great title because it makes you think about what the fuck it's about. Hey, tell me about some of these projects, right? Grande Gufo, Bug Prentice, Vula Veal.
Yeah.
Skilja. Yeah.
Well.
Lightness.
Thanks, man.
That's Can you tell great. Us a little something about them? Because I know nothing. All I know is the sounds, and I love it.
Yeah, well, these are all kind of bands that I got. Well, Skilja is my own band, so that's sort of my own. That's kind of started as a solo project. And that's all my music that I've written. We just sort of detuned. Every tune is detuned in a different harmonic series, so I get different harmonic bases with it, you know. That's something that I'm touring right now. I've just put the album out in July, so I'm on the road with that. But the other bands are just kind of all bands that I've started getting into when I was living in London and playing with different people and, you know, kind of developing my sound. And I think most of the things that I've chosen is sort of stuff that I felt like they really wanted me as a bass player, you know, because of, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you ain't the shot caller. They asked you to come help.
Yeah, they just want to add your thing to it. So,
right, and because you got a certain kind of voice.
They're all close to my heart, you know. All those bands are sort of really close to my heart because of that, where you're not just sort of fulfilling a bass role, but you actually right. bring it.
Taking the job of the dead guy. I've done some of that.
Exactly.
Hey, sometimes it's beautiful music, but yeah, you're taking the job of the dead dude.
Yeah.
but they picked you with you in mind because you got a certain kind of sound and a way of working it. Yeah, 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 I understand.
Yeah.
But on the other side, it's you being the shot caller with the skill.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So how long were you at that uni?
For 3 years.
And then what'd you do?
And after that, I just started working, you know, as a bass player. I was just playing with lots of bands and I was just playing and touring. And that's where I still am at now. Same kind of thing. And I just kind of got stuck in London because you sort of start playing with people that are around. And, you know, it just didn't make sense for me to move anywhere else because that's where my crowd was and my friends and, you know, my bands and everything, so I'm still. Sometimes I think, oh, maybe I should move somewhere else, but then I'm like, no, actually, you know, why start again somewhere else if you sort of worked on something quite hard and, you know, I'm not sure if I'd have the energy to do that right now.
Instead of like energy and like reinventing the living place again, yeah, I understand.
Yeah,
I totally
just sort of
understand.
Going out meeting people and, you know, all these kind of. Faff really, so it's kind of like I'm good where I am and I know a lot of people and I've got a lot of work here as well, so it's kind of, it works for me. Although London in many ways is not a great place at the moment.
Well, it costs a lot of money, right?
So costs a lot of money, yeah. It's not, you know, it's not an easy place for musicians because gigs are not paid very well. Like, you know, in London it's really difficult to get a well-paid gig, so you kind of need to travel a lot. But on the other side, there's a lot of great people that live here and they do stuff and do really interesting.
I think we got the same thing going with New York City. It's a magnet that attracts a lot of people, but it's kind of tough to live there because the money's in the situation.
Yeah, right.
Was that your first band that you were shot caller since that two bass band when you were a kid?
Well, you know, it's kind of, writing this music was so... Like spontaneous for me. I didn't really plan to have my own band. I was always sort of playing bass for other people, and I never felt the need to be a band leader. And then I was invited to do like a sort of monthly mixtape, and this guy asked me to write a tune every month. And I remember the deadline was on that one day, and I just got back from a flight somewhere, and I took my bass out of my bass case, and all the strings were detuned because it was up in the overhead locker. And I just started like fucking about with harmonics, and I just put a mic. I didn't even plug it in or anything. I just put a mic in front of the electric bass and recorded an improvisation. And then I just layered some vocals on top of it. And then I had that first track, and I was like, oh, this actually sounds really good. You know, this my voice, like sort of female voice with the harmonics, it kind of complements each other in an interesting way and sounds different to what I've heard before. And then the guy heard it, and he was like, oh, that's really great. You know, why don't you do something similar every month? And I was like, okay, I'll do that. And I just did every month, then I worked on different tunings, and I got kind of sort of obviously got a bit more into...
Yeah, there's a Greek word for that. Eureka.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Look, we're at the end of the second hour, March 8, 2022. Just want Peter's special guest, Ruth Kohler. Hold time for hour three. March 8, 2022. Third hour of the Watch for Pedro show.
As we tarry in Thank you. sa famille. J'ai perdu mon pays et ma maison. J'ai perdu mes amis et j'ai même perdu mon nom. Je suis une pauvre fille loin de sa famille. Jarre sur la terre comme une étrangère. Je suis une pauvre fille loin de sa famille. Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show. Start off the third hour with Spanish Merchant's Daughter from Sam Amadon. Probably you were helping somebody out there. Now Sarah Devachi after that with Border of Mine. Poor Girl Blues from Miriam Gender. And Un Ministrante Mouth Sis Life as Purpose Slow Torch Removal from Rubber O Cement. That's a fucking tough. Let's spin with Ghostly. You know, I understand reluctance to, because it seems the natural mode of bass is, when I think of the politics of bass, if there's such a thing, we look good making them look good. And that's a great kind of nurturing role, you know. But mm-hmm. I think we do, because of that role, most of the time, when it is time for us to be shot caller, we do bring another perspective.
Mm-hmm. I agree, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Because we're not used to it. It's new, and then it's sort of, it happens without thinking about it too much, you know, and then the magic happens in a way, I think.
Yeah, I really do. You know, I'm 64 now, and I found out life is kind of about taking turns. So it's good mm-hmm. to play different roles, you know, and different kind of things. Why not? Yeah, you get more, I don't know, if you think of life as a classroom, it's more opportunity to learn more stuff and like that. So that's interesting that a challenge led to you. So there's a lesson there, right? Sometimes take up a challenge, even though it's kind of different for you. And mm-hmm. detoned mm-hmm. in everything, too. And without an amplifier, everything that's not supposed to happen, right? I got to say, yeah. When I'm reading up on the internet, other bass players are always talking about gear. Gear is going to do it. Just got to get the right piece of gear, you know?
Yeah, I'm left the opposite to that.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
I've got no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah, right? Because at the end of the day, it sounds anyway, right? Like what the listener, the gig goer experiences, it just sounds, you know, like that Mr. Frank Morgan in Wizard of Oz. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. He was the man behind the curtain, you know? At the end of the day, they don't know how it's made, so.
Yeah, people yeah.
Still, I think it's part of the materialist thing. Like, you just need to buy the right product and you'll have it, you know. And actually,
yeah, I always think people that have most the perfect gear are usually the shittest musicians. Sorry, maybe I shouldn't say that. In the show,
no, you can. I'm way into that. I'm way into that.
Are you listening actually to what you're doing? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's supposed to be good. I paid this much for it. Kind of a materialist fetish, a trippy thing. And then it's supposed to be some kind of tool to make art, right? Like if you got a pocket knife there, where is the art? Is it really the pocket knife or what's going to get carved with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That could be kind of a metaphor. So I was interested in this Let's Spin. How where's this in the timeline of your projects?
That's a band that I started sort of playing with maybe about 8 years ago or something. And they were just a group of friends, really. And we just got a gig offered, or like a run of gigs offered. And we're like, right, let's just do it. We, you know, we're just all going to write some music for it and do a day's worth of rehearsing. And then we do it. And that's kind of how it happened. And we've done, I think, three. We're just working on the third or fourth album now, and it's just developed from then onwards, and we just all write for it. So it's not, no one's the band leader, but we all sort of chip in with organizing and
so it's a true collab.
Hmm? I was going to ask you
about improvisational music. To me, the big dilemma mm-hmm. is like, who goes first?
I think I'm quite bossy in that respect. I just thought,
like, you guys are playing to this lick. I'm setting up
yeah,
the jam.
Like, I'm the boss. Okay. You listen to me.
Who's Sam Amadon?
Sam Amadon. He's a folk musician from Vermont. He's really amazing. I absolutely love his music and his voice. He's a singer. Uh-huh. He plays violin as well, guitar and banjo. So yeah, he's an American. He lives in London, but he's obviously from Vermont, and
a lot of the marble in the building.
You should check out his music if you don't know it, because
I dug this. A lot of the marble we use in DC for those buildings come from Vermont. This is a joke, right? Irish handcuffs. It's right. It's a beer in each hand, right?
Yes, it is.
Let's listen. Chris Montague.
Thank you.
for Female Show. Last music for this edition. Start off that chunk, Chris Montague with Irish Handcuffs. Then Stomping Some Waterhouse from their latest record, Worker Drone, is the tune. AB Normal, his brother Phil up in Mammoth with Everything Gonna Be Alright Eventually, Three Car Garage version. And finally, The Golden Age of Steam, Part 5. Octopus. What's this? Yeah, what is part 5 of The Golden Age of Steam?
That's like a drone band that I play with. And we just play like massive drones and have huge saxophone shreds over it for hours. And it's just amazing. I love it.
And this is part 5, so there's 4 parts ahead of it?
Yes, there's a whole album of it.
Wow. But right now, the most recent thing you got going is your Skillia.
Yeah, so right now I'm touring with Skilla and also with Melt Yourself Down. So I'm just in the middle of
Okay, Melt Yourself Down, and we played that earlier in the show.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
Is that the one that made the video with the skateboarder?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
That is such a trippy tune. It's kind of rapping, but it kind of ain't.
Yeah. The singer is really great. He's from Mauritius, and he's just got this amazing voice, and he sometimes just makes up his own language, and you know.
And I sell myself to myself. I never disagree. Yeah. We never disagree. We never disagree. That's so clever. I mean, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
And the idea of skateboarders, right? The eternal youth. Don't try it with. You can think about it, people, but if you try it in middle age, you might get hurt. So watch out. Okay. Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, I've got a website, which is just my name, so ruthgoller.com.
Okay, people, ruthgoller.com.
Yeah, that's it.
And you probably got links for stuff there.
Yeah, all videos and all sorts of stuff is on there.
So. I'm glad you got your own website, because that's like having your own fanzine.
Yeah, well, it's kind of easy. Someone did all that for me, because I'm quite rubbish on all social media and all that
kind of
stuff.
Yeah, but at least you don't just have a corporate representation.
Yeah, no. As a friend who did it, and she, you know, she sorts all of that stuff out for me, so I'm really, really grateful.
And what about your advice? What about your advice to somebody just getting on with music or with bass?
Well, I just always think to stay truthful to what you like and what you don't like, you know. Don't look too far ahead and really embrace instinct and spontaneity, because for me that was a real revelation, and that's when I made the most honest music, and not just music that to me was important, it resonated with other people the best as well. So never sort of think, you know, what do people like, I should be writing that kind of stuff, that's bollocks. I think just write what you really like and what you can really feel deeply, and that's the thing that really matters. Whether someone listens to it or not doesn't really matter. It just that it exists in that honest way is the best thing about music, I think.
John Coltrane said something about he believed musicians were after some kind of truth. Musician can tell when something's phony. So that's interesting that you bring that up, you know. And you have no plans for 5-string and 6-string.
Exactly. Don't do that. Whatever you do, don't do that.
And what about amplifiers?
Well, I've got my favorite amp is an orange. I've got this orange valve amp, which I really love. And it's really simple. It's got 3 knobs on it, and that's it. I know how to use it. It's great.
Yeah.
Really heavy though, I can hardly carry
that, that I'm not into.
Someone on the street to come and help me lift it in the car.
Yeah, that I'm not into. I've moved on, but I like the idea of the few knob things, yeah. But the Class D, I mean, I'm going on tour with a 6.5-pound, 1,200-watt amp. For an old cripple like me, this is a good thing. It's always been the lead sleds, yeah. But and then speaker boxes, you know. There's a great company in Brighton called Bareface. 1,200-watt, 2x12 for £40. Not money-wise, weight-wise. Yeah, maybe 20.
I should look into that because it's really breaking my back. This amp, yeah. As much as I love it, but it's just fucking heavy.
Well, look, when I get over there, I think I'm going to be there in less than a year helping the Flipper guys out again. I hope I get to meet up again.
Oh, please, Mike.
More conscious this time.
I'd love because, that.
What, you know, any friend of any amico of fellow stayers, one of mine and stuff, but sometimes I get so distracted, you know, so, but we could have a good bass talk, I think. Thank you so much for being on the show. When you get new music, please come back on.
Mike, thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure.
Okay, we keep on keeping on, right? People, okay. March 8th, 2022, Disha Watt Peters, you keep your powder dry.